Social engineering is a term that you often hear me use. Modern society does not evolve organically. It's not all just random evolution. No. Modern society is engineered to be the way that it is. You have an elite group, generally in the shadows, but their front men are people in government and media. And this elite group have a vision of how they want society to be. And in order to manifest that vision into physical reality, they have to influence us, the little people, the masses, to behave in certain ways. First of all, to think in a certain way, to have a certain perception, and then to follow through with our behavior. And they do this by influencing us through the media, television, movies, TV series, newspapers, etc., etc. This is how it's done, even video games. Okay? Anything that the powers that be bring in, whether it's malevolent or benevolent, they're going to put a positive spin on it. Even if it's the most sinister thing imaginable, they're not going to make it look like it's sinister. They're going to market it as though it's something amazing. If you go back to, you know, the 1930s and Nazi Germany, you would have seen the same thing. All of the things which we think are sinister about Nazi Germany in the 30s, the German people, many of them didn't see it as sinister because they were brainwashed into believing this was reasonable and it was a good thing. Okay, the same thing goes on today, although the methods of social engineering are far more sophisticated today than they were in 1930s Germany. Okay, and so today, in this episode, I'm going to be talking about a very popular series on Netflix called Stranger Things, right? But before I get to that, for those who are dubious about my claim that there are not only one hidden hand, but multiple hidden hands manipulating the direction of society, anybody who doubts this, look up the name Edward Bernays. I've spoken about him before. I've done an episode on him before. Look up Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays was almost the epitome of a Svengali figure. That's what Edward Bernays was. And Edward Bernays wasn't a one-off. Wasn't just some random individual, okay? And he is, even in mainstream history, etc., referred to as the father of propaganda and public relations. Edward Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. The co-founder of Netflix, which Stranger Things is, you know, a Netflix series. The co-founder of Netflix is a guy called Mark Randolph. Mark Randolph is the nephew or great nephew, if that's even the right term to use, of Edward Bernays. So you've got Randolph, Bernays, and Freud all in the same family. And that's down the paternal line. Well, that's not a coincidence, is it? For the coincidence theorists, you've got all these influential people in the same family. You've got Randolph, who's in media, or he's no longer the CEO of Netflix anymore, but he was. He was certainly the co-founder. So you've got Randolph, whose middle name is Bernays, by the way. Mark Bernays Randolph. You've got him. You've got Edward Bernays, who even by mainstream accounts was the godfather of propaganda, and everything to do with Bernays, read any of Bernays' works, and all he talks about is methods of psychologically manipulating the masses through advertising, through media, etc. This is what Bernays' whole career was about. This is what he was employed by corporations, etc., to do, to manipulate people's thoughts, perceptions, beliefs, and therefore behavior. Fact. That's not conjecture. Plenty of information out there on Edward Bernays. And it's not a coincidence that Edward Bernays is the nephew of Sigmund Freud. That's not a coincidence. Sigmund Freud, of course, the famous psychologist. Yeah? That is not a coincidence. Because Benes went into a field which employs a lot of psychology when it comes to, you know, social engineering, propaganda, culture creation. It's all in the family, all right? So when it comes to Mark Randolph, CEO of Netflix, he's also in a field, which I would suggest psychology plays a big part in. And Netflix as an entity plays a massive part in culture creation and social engineering today because of the fact that Netflix is so popular, particularly among younger people. And younger people, not the old clapped out, you know, generation like me and people older than me. Nah, the social engineers don't care so much about people my age and older because they see us as clapped out. They see us as people who the younger generation really won't listen to. And I've spoken in previous episodes about how society and culture changes so rapidly these days. I think probably since the early 20th century towards the end of the 19th century, the change in culture is so rapid from generation to generation that you have a disconnect between each generation. This is why you get parents who can't relate to their kids, who don't understand their kids. And the kids don't want to listen to the parents. You wouldn't understand. It was different in your time. This is the attitude that kids have towards their parents. And we are raised to think that this is normal. This is not normal. In centuries gone by, for the overwhelming majority of human existence on this earth, culture doesn't change that rapidly. Apart from in times of war and stuff like that, and that is the minority of the time. For most people, throughout the ages, for 200,000 years, the culture that they live in doesn't change that much from generation to generation. In fact, you can find cultures that of Bedouin who live out in the desert in Arabia, or Bushmen who live in Southern Africa, or tribesmen who live in the Amazon jungle, and their way of life has barely changed in thousands of years. That is the norm for the majority of human existence. And so what does that mean? Well, that means that the younger generation coming up in societies like that look to the older generation for advice and guidance, because the life and the challenges that they're going to be facing are almost identical to the life and the challenges that the older generation had to face, because the culture and the way of life hasn't changed from each generation. Do you understand? That's why in those traditional cultures, the elders are revered. The elders are looked upon with respect. Whereas in the modern society, which is not natural, which is, you know, the human psyche is still trying to acclimatize to the rapid change in culture that we're seeing from year to year now, never mind decade to decade. The human psyche is struggling to cope with this. And as I say, as a result, you get this disconnect between generations where the youth in the modern world today don't really have respect for the older generations because the culture is so different that they feel like, what can the older generation teach me about what's going on now? Their generation was so different. The culture, their times, their values, etc. Their lifestyle was so different to our lifestyle and the way we're growing up. So we don't look to them for guidance. We're going to guide ourselves. In truth, the media is going to guide them. And this is where I start on the analysis of the television series Netflix, the Netflix series Stranger Things, excuse me. So, the first time I heard about Stranger Things, I think it was maybe a couple people on Facebook who suggested that I watch Stranger Things, the first season, or the first two seasons. And then I went to go and see the movie It, the remake of the 1990 movie or 1990 TV miniseries. And I liked it. I thought it was very entertaining. I liked the new take on the old miniseries. But a friend of mine, and I did a review of it on YouTube, a friend of mine WhatsApped me and he said, "I can't believe you like it. I thought it was complete trash." And hey, different strokes for different folks, right? He said, maybe it's because I've watched programs like Stranger Things. So if you like the 1980s, you know, if you like that kind of nostalgic vibe, you should watch Stranger Things. And he made out as though Stranger Things was way better than it. I went ahead and started watching Stranger Things on Netflix with my girl. And I have to say, I thought Stranger Things was trash. Season one and two, my girl ended up watching it because she's a series addict. She'll sit down, 5 hours, 6 hours straight and watch episodes of these series. I can't do that. Generally, I'm not really a fan of series anyway. The only series that I still watch is The X-Files, and that's not the new seasons. I've got the box set of all the old X-Files on Blu-ray, and that's what I watch. But in terms of new television series, it's just not for me. I've tried watching a few here and there. It just really not for me. And Stranger Things, I thought it was boring as hell. I was bored to death from the first couple episodes. First few episodes, I was like, this is boring as hell. It's just a bunch of kids standing around talking and nattering. I just found it extremely boring. And I thought the movie It was way more entertaining and it invoked far more of the 80s nostalgia for me personally. Be that as it may, my girl continued to watch Stranger Things and I would, come in now and again, talk to her while she was watching and see some of the things that were happening. And I got the lowdown from her about, what was happening in the series and all that kind of stuff. So she filled me in on what happened during the series without me having to sit through it all. Although I did, as I say, see bits and pieces as she was watching it throughout. So first season of Stranger Things, first two seasons, excuse me, I got the lowdown on. And just recently, they've dropped season three of Stranger Things. Now, again, I was with my girl the other day and I sat down with her and we watched the first two, first three episodes of Stranger Things, season three. And I have to say, the first three episodes of season three, to me, were far more interesting than any of the episodes I saw in season one. Okay, far more interesting. However, they've cranked up the level of feminist propaganda and programming in the first three episodes of season three. And I have to imagine it's going to continue on for the remainder of season three. The feminist propaganda. What do I mean by that? Some of you will be talking about, what do you mean? I love Stranger Things. There's no feminist propaganda. Oh, yes, there is. You're paying attention, it's right there in your face. And this is why it's so effective, because it works on a subconscious level. It catches people off guard. They give you programming for entertainment. It's disguised as entertainment. Really, it's programming. That's why it gets you. Same with music. Yeah, you can like a beat. You can like the way somebody's singing or flowing or rapping. And just from an artistic point of view, it can draw you in. Oh, this is great. But what you're not thinking about is what they're talking about in the lyrics and how that's affecting you subconsciously. When you're watching the music videos, how that affects your behavior. And I mentioned a long time ago that even back in the 1990s or the early 2000s, Busta Rhymes, who's a very famous rapper, dropped a song called Pastor Kavarsier. Prior to him making that song, Kavarsier brandy was something I'd personally never had before. And most black people had never had Kavarsier before. But once Busta Rhymes made that song, Kavarsier literally overnight became the favorite drink of millions, I'm not joking, millions of young black people because of the fact that Busta Rhymes mentioned it in a song. That is the power of music. That is the power of media when it comes to influencing the behavior of people, particularly young people. Netflix, same situation. So let me talk about the social engineering, the feminist propaganda, the weaponized feminism that you have in Stranger Things. So let me talk about some of the characters. The main character in Stranger Things is called 11, or L for short. That's generally what she's called. She's a female who is literally a superhero. She has superpowers, right? She has kind of, I'm not sure if she has precognitive powers, but she's got psychic powers where she could remote view and see things which are happening elsewhere, okay? Or see things which are happening in a different dimension. And she also has the power of telekinesis, moving things without touching them. Okay, so she's literally a superhero, 11. And by the way, L is a very, very interesting name. 11 is an interesting number, for one. I've talked about the significance of the number 11 and multiples of the number 11 in the occult, like 9/11, for example. And the fact that so many adverts, particularly when companies are selling things and they have discounts, so often you'll see the number 33, which of course is a Freemasonic number. And within Freemasonry and many other occult circles, 11 and multiples of 11 are very significant. Okay. So I don't think it's a coincidence, having done a little bit of research into the occult over the years and numerology, I don't think it's a coincidence that this character is called 11. I also don't think it's a coincidence that they've shortened it to L, which can be short for Elohim, etc. And I'll go into that maybe in a different episode, but those of you who are well versed in this area will understand what I'm alluding to when I talk about Elohim, L, etc. Anyway, this character L is basically the main character, the superhero of the show, and she can essentially do no wrong. All right, there are moments in season one, season two, where she's being a bit of a brat. But at the same time, ultimately, she is cast in a very, very good light and is literally a superwoman. Her boyfriend, and this is what was so interesting to me, her boyfriend is a character called Mike Wheeler. Mike Wheeler is portrayed as very weak compared to Elle, the girlfriend. Very weak, far less intelligent, far less honest, far less brave. And this is a reoccurring theme that you're going to see with many of these characters. Now, there's a moment in season three, in one of the first three episodes, where Mike lies to Elle. And he lies to her about why he can't see her, because he's basically scared away from seeing her by the police chief. Okay, the police chief is almost like Elle's surrogate father. And he basically warns Mike off because, you know, the pair of teenagers are getting a little bit too close for comfort. And, you know, the police chief being Elle's surrogate dad is like, you know, I don't like this boy coming around all the time and they're smooching in her bedroom. And, you know, I don't know what they could get up to. You understand, you know, the scenario. So he basically warns Mike, and Mike has to make up some excuse as to why he can't come and see Elle. So Elle realizes that he's lying and she dumps him. Now, when she dumps him, she's advised to do so by her friend called Max Mayfield, who's also a female. Now, Max Mayfield is going out with a token black character in the series called Lucas Sinclair. And Max advises Elle to dump Mike. Yeah, she says that she has dumped her boyfriend Lucas like multiple times. And again, Max is portrayed as a far stronger character, and probably even stronger physically than her boyfriend Lucas Sinclair. Lucas Sinclair, just like Mike Wheeler, is portrayed as kind of very childish. I mean, they are children, but, you know, they're portrayed as extra childish, weak, while their girlfriends are extremely strong and virtuous. And when Elle takes the advice of Max and dumps her boyfriend Mike, the song Cold as Ice comes on. And then Elle and Max go off on a shopping spree. Okay, and this, you know, subconsciously is programming females with this perception that you are better off by yourself. You're better off dumping the man, because once you dump the boyfriend, then you can spread your wings and go and be the person you want to be with your friends and go shopping, right? Shopping, right? Consumerism. Go and do all that. That's where happiness lies. And the way that she dumps him is seen as like a triumphant moment in the episode. And the song Cold as Ice comes on, but the girls are celebrating and it's just portrayed as a happy moment. If the roles were reversed and a man was dumping a girl, or excuse me, a boy was dumping a girl, you can guarantee that they would not put it in some triumphant and celebratory light. It wouldn't be portrayed like that. The guy would be portrayed as the bad person. And particularly when you've got an individual who claims that they've dumped their boyfriend or girlfriend 5 times. And they always come crawling back. This is what Max Mayfield, I hope I didn't say Byfield before, Max Mayfield said about her boyfriend, Lucas Sinclair, that she's dumped him a bunch of times. He always comes crawling back. Again, the male come crawling back on their hands and knees, pathetic, groveling. This is the psychological programming of elevating the female above the male. And also psychologically programming the female to be cold towards the male and think that this kind of behavior is desirable. This is what you're getting because you've got kids here behaving like this. The pathetic, weak, groveling male and the virtuous, strong, extremely intelligent females who just brush the males off to go shopping and stuff like that. Yeah. And again, Max is portrayed as far more intelligent, far more brave and virtuous than her boyfriend, Lucas Sinclair. To listen to the rest of this episode and also gain access to all my other podcasts, which is literally hundreds of hours of material now, to get access to all that, sign up with me here on Patreon. It costs about £2 a month. There's no contract. You can cancel at any time. You get access to all that extra content. So yeah, make sure you sign up with me here on Patreon to hear the rest of this episode about Stranger Things and the subliminal programming that it contains. All right, I'm out.